Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. It's a big old Tuesday show, and we're very lucky to have once again Tuesdays with Turner, Nina Turner. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, John. I love that. Tuesdays with Turner. Let's do that. Yes.
I like it. We're someday we'll have a t-shirt for that. But we do already have a t-shirt. I don't know if we can zoom out, but I came back from my vacation. I got to my house and I had a little package with a couple of shirts in it. Can I show this off if the director could zoom out? I got a wish a Karen Wood shirt for Indisputable.
Wish a Karen Wood.
How nice is that? So I got a couple of shirts from Indisputable. Those are available at shop2it.com right now. So very exciting if you want to show support for Indisputable. But anyway, I've been gone for a week, Senator Turner, but I'm very glad to be coming back to the show to do one with you.
Glad you're back too. I hope it was a very fruitful.
It was great because it wasn't very fruitful. I didn't do anything. I was supposed to go away to a convention. I booked months earlier, and then you know Delta and all that. So I decided to go visit my friend Quay in Lee's Summit, Missouri, for a bunch of days. And we just I edited my book a bit, but other than that, we just watched TV. I went and saw Shang-Chi and Black Widow for the second time. That's about it, really.
But that's beautiful because you got a chance to relax and do what you needed to do, which was decompress.
Yes, we all need that. Now I will warn the audience. Basically, just as I got on the plane to come home, I started to feel a little tickle in my throat, and that has developed into full-blown sickness. So before coming back to the studio yesterday, I had the day off. I did go and get the rapid PCR COVID test. I do not have COVID, but I am sick. And I will say, you know, I love that in America you have free, easy access to the vaccine, and we have tests. If you want to get tested, you can probably get tested right now. I was lucky enough that I could go and get a rapid test. But it was $195. And for a lot of people that like I really did not want to potentially infect anyone at work. But that's crazy expensive. We have got to subsidize that. Like think about how many people might suspect they might have COVID and they'd love to know as fast as possible, but can't pay $195. Doesn't that seem crazy?
John, it is. And let me tell you something to add on to it. I have been invited to go to the UK. And I'll be there with the progressive side of the UK invited me to come in. It is the Postal Workers Union, also a fabulous magazine, the Tribune magazine. And guess what? I need to take the rapid test. Mind blown. I'm right with you. When I went and saw the price, $199, and I got to pay $400 actually, because I have somebody else going with me. And I am just fit to be tied. You absolutely. I thought I was seeing things, but now you just confirmed that is really true. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is definitely unaffordable for many people, and it definitely needs to be subsidized.
Yeah, yeah, and we have insurance, but insurance has nothing to do with it apparently. Because why would the insurance you not get COVID?
Why would your insurance kick in? Why?
Ridiculous. Totally ridiculous. That said, you know, for the audience, my throat could give out any minute. That's why I didn't do a pre-show. I'm gonna do what I can. I am preemptively, just to be safe, I am taking ivermectin. I basically went into a barn and any pill-shaped thing I saw, I just started taking that. So whatever sheep flu I might have, I'm well protected and very glad to be back here. But that said, Senator Turner, you ready to talk about some news?
Yeah, but you feel better now because take care of yourself. But yeah, let's go ahead and talk about the news, your health and now the news.
Thank you. And we will be talking about the pandemic a little bit later on. Oh, by the way, if you could hit the like button, share the stream, that would be great. I haven't done the show for a week, so I don't remember how to do my job anymore. But that said, we're going to do what we can. Why don't we launch into this first story? We're waiting to find out what the Democrats are actually going to do with their big reconciliation bill. And so you have the Democrats, and you know, they're in charge. White House, we've got the Senate, we've got the House, but unfortunately, there's a parliamentarian. That's basically like the Avengers versus Thanos. It's a coin flip on who's gonna win, because apparently the parliamentarian has decided that the Democrat plan to put a path to citizenship for 8 million undocumented immigrants cannot be a part of the reconciliation bill. The parliamentarian, whose name is Elizabeth McDonough, something you shouldn't ever need to know, But you know, Democrats called the plan to make an estimated 8 million undocumented immigrants eligible for green cards a quote broad new immigration policy that could not be included. And that's in the reconciliation process, which is a procedure that can be used to pass budget bills with a simple majority of senators. Or in other words, the only way anything can get done, because the Republicans aren't gonna support literally anything. And so the Democrats had been saying, offering green cards to 8 million undocumented immigrants as part of the bill would effectively have a budgetary impact, because it would allow them to gain permanent residency, which would qualify them for federal benefits, costing an estimated $139.6 billion over 10 years, which is obviously a substantial budgetary impact. But McDonough wasn't having it. She was saying this goes beyond just budgetary stuff, so you can't have it. So I guess that's it, Nina. Nothing to be done. Parliamentarian, you know, I may not agree with her, but she was elected by a majority of the nothing. So I guess there's nothing we can do.
Well, you know, her it's just a suggestion. It's not binding. The Senate does not have to do what the parliamentarian says. You know, we've been down this road, John. I'm old enough to remember that $15 an hour minimum wage increase that this same parliamentarian said, nope, cannot do it. It's just an opinion. It is not binding. She was, as you said, selected by the United States Senate. They don't have to keep her, and they don't have to do what she says. It's not binding.
Now, as you pointed out, we have been through this before. And at that point, people brought up a variety of different things the Democrats could do to either ignore the advice, replace her, whatever. They chose not to do that. Now, I saw Chuck Schumer had announced that they're going to appeal the decision or something. I don't know what that means. I think he literally means appealing it to the same person. So I don't know why she would change her mind. But that seems to me like, oh shucks, we're not actually gonna do anything. Do you expect that there's gonna be any substantial pushback?
No, I mean, I think there may be some pushback, but it'll be from the more progressive members of that body. But in terms of having an absolute pushback on the parliamentarian's decision, no, I don't. And you know what, John, I want to be wrong. But yes, we have seen this movie before from beginning to end. And all of this stuff is just a formality. The Senate, I mean, listen, gave the Democrats the White House, gave the Democrats the US Senate. They are in control of the Congress. And I swear to you, it seems like it is harder now for them to get anything done than before. And they continue to come up with the same sad excuses. Unacceptable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that they're feeling some anxiety, because before, they couldn't do anything. And now, like, it looked like maybe they could. And oh, thank God the parliamentarian said that we didn't have to do it. That really took the load off. I'm sure they appreciated that. But as you pointed out, some of the progressives.
No, John, I'm sorry. Some of them are hiding. They're hiding behind this parliamentarian. And no shade towards her. You know, she's reading it as she sees it. That's fine. But they can overrule her. I just want the people joining us on this journey to understand that her decision, it's advice, it is not binding.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, like we know politicians are supposed to be ambitious, right? They want power. Okay, so in the cases where they could have power if they did X, but they choose not to do X, you really gotta ask yourself, what is the greater interest for them that would stop them from doing this? So like when they like laud the filibuster just stops them from doing something. And yet they love it. Why would they love something that stops them from accomplishing their supposed goals? Well, if they didn't actually have those goals, if they kind of liked the fact that they didn't have to do anything, because they already have the power that they need. The power they have is their presence in the government. That gets them what they want, which is financial support from wealthy donors. Accomplishing supposed legislative goals that they campaigned on or whatever, that doesn't get them more donations from those corporations. So why do them? And in fact, it might get them primaried by some other corporatist. If they suddenly start, you know, supporting raising taxes on corporations or the wealthy, it's entirely possible that they could not only stop getting donations from those people, but find themselves facing competition as well. So we're gonna talk in a bit about the filibuster more. But Manchin and Sinema, they're some of these things. Sinema now is she's coming out against the prescription drug benefit changes. She had previously campaigned just a couple of years ago on we have got to do something, we've got to reform this. And now she's threatening to tank the entire reconciliation bill if they do the thing that in 2018 she was calling to have happen. It's ridiculous. Well,
it is, John. You say one thing and you do another once you actually get the power. And that is what is happening here. And any politician, I mean any Republican or Democrat, but we're focusing in on the Democrats because they control all the levers of power in that Congress, both chambers and also the presidency. Any elected official that will stand in the way of the American people being able to have affordable prescription drugs, something is wrong with them. But you know what? She's answering to her owner donors. And they usually always win with this system, this rigged system. And that is why we really need to get more people who have consciousness and who have intestinal fortitude to stand up against these forces. And we need campaign finance reform, John. Let me just throw that out there too while we're talking about what we need to change.
Yeah. Yeah, the effective money is so crazy that you can we're still trying to convince people in Arizona that Sinema doesn't have her back. Some people in West Virginia really believe no, Manchin understands working class interests. No, he doesn't care at all about that. And it's because of all the money. I was watching, I don't normally watch CNN or MSNBC or whatever, but I was in Missouri for the week and my friend, while he's drinking his coffee in the morning, he'll put on CNN. And I saw this same ad over and over every break. And it was some older man who needed help with his health. And the end message is Medicare negotiating isn't the answer. I just thought, what the hell are you talking about? I get that they got to try to do this, but the message that the your insurance provider effectively should not try to use their influence to make your medication cheaper, that was flooding the airwaves of CNN. Every single break they had ads like that. And that is a lot of money that's going into that because those companies want to save a bunch of money. Anyway, just very, very frustrating to see every step of the way. We're not surprised, but it's frustrating to see the process getting sidelined by people who fundamentally don't care. They don't care about the interests of their constituents. They didn't care about pursuing the goals that they alleged to support just a couple of years ago.
That's right. And just preserving the status quo. They don't care about preserving the health of the people who need those prescription drugs. And a lot of people are either underinsured or uninsured. We are the only industrialized nation in the world that does not have some type of universal healthcare. And part of healthcare is being able to get your prescription drugs that enhance your life. You know, John, on the campaign trail, I got a chance to meet a young woman and she does have health insurance through her job. But she said, Senator Turner, one of the reasons why I'm supporting you is because one day I might not have my health insurance. And if I don't have my health insurance, I have type 1 diabetes. My prescription drug costs would be, without my insurance, $4,000 a month. Even if somebody was in the, a month. And this is to live. This ain't for, cosmetics. This is to preserve her life. And just think about it. And she communicates on a regular basis with people who don't have healthcare. She even shares some of her insulin with folks. Nobody should have to live like that, or on the other side of that, be forced to think about dying like that because we commodify healthcare and that we will not bring the cost of prescription drugs under control. We can absolutely do that in the United States of America. That's what I want folks to know. Yeah. We need to be mad as hell and deciding that we're not going to take it anymore when it comes to the commodification of healthcare and putting people's lives at risk for profit. Yeah.
You're 100% right. And think about the gap between the instance, the woman you're talking about there, the suffering that she feels, which is, there will be differences from other people, but millions and millions and millions of Americans are experiencing something like that. And then Manchin or Sinema, They're not suffering in any way. They're not even worried about like political consequences in a couple of years, like an abstract career thing years in the future. They're not suffering at all. So the status quo looks pretty good if you're doing pretty good on the status quo.
It does. Now, and one, can I just make one other quick point? And they have, drum roll please, taxpayer sponsored healthcare, those two. We, the taxpayer, pay for the healthcare of the members of Congress. Hello, somebody. So how dare they stand in the way of millions of Americans getting the lower cost prescription drugs and the healthcare that they need?
100%. They're going to be just fine.
Why don't they give it up, John? Let all the folks that stand in the way of universal healthcare and driving down the cost of prescription drugs, let them give up their taxpayer sponsored healthcare.
Doubt it. Now, really fast, I just want to read a couple of quotes because we focused on Manchin and Sinema because they're part of the problem. But there was a great Onion headline. It was I think it was Joe Manchin getting pushback for taking all the credit when so many other Democrats also won't vote for any of this stuff either. But anyway, Dick Durbin was asked about the possibility of trying to overrule the parliamentarian and said, "I don't believe that's realistic. I think the votes needed on the floor are not there." Which, look, I agree, probably the votes aren't there right now, but he didn't really seem that bothered by it. Bob Menendez says, "While I understand the passion and I understand the sentiment behind it, I think it's not necessarily constructive at this point." Well, I don't want to be unconstructive. And Manchin says he won't undermine the Byrd rule, which lays out the guidelines for what could be included under reconciliation. Sinema said earlier this year there was no instance where she would overrule the parliamentarian. Like nothing within the bounds of time or space, because it's a convenient shield. You don't have to do anything if someone can take the blame or whatever. And that is fundamentally the problem. We have all these elected representatives that will make promises. Or in the case of someone like Manchin, I don't even think he really promises anything when he's running for office. And if they don't deliver, when they don't deliver, there are no consequences to them. They don't have to deliver anything to keep their job and the big paycheck and all the benefits and eventually getting a lobbying job or a job on a corporate board or something like that. They can just continue. And that's the system that we have. Any final thoughts about this?
The consequence part, John, and it's called election. And we got to get people galvanized. Conscious minded people all over this country are going to have to galvanize, come together. As Michael Render, AKA Killer Mike, says, plot, plan, strategize, organize, and mobilize on their own behalf and put people in office who actually give a damn about what they're going through. This is wrong.
We need a good candidate in 2024.
Yeah, we definitely do. But even there, when we got to deal with 2022 before we get to 2024, this is maddening what the American people are accepting from these people who hold their power. Again, it is your power. It's our power. They are elected to do our bidding, and they're not doing our bidding because they're safe. They're set. A lot of these people are set for life, and their children and their children's children are set for life. So they're showing very clearly what they think about the poor, the working poor, and the barely middle class, which it doesn't have to be this way. It doesn't have to stay this way.
Yeah, I hope so. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about a dark milestone being reached in the pandemic. And we'll also touch base with Tucker Carlson's new theory about why the military is being mandated to get the vaccine. It's a fun one, but all that after this. Okay, I am hoping my throat is going to last. I can feel it starting to protest, but we will see what happens as we launch into this next story. We've passed a lot of bad milestones when it comes to the COVID-19 pandemic, when the first, 1,000 people died, 100,000, 500,000. These are all terrible, terrible things, passing the death tolls of wars. Well, now we've passed the worst pandemic in not just recent history, but effectively like the history that we remember and have logged. We've passed the 1918 flu pandemic. Now that was referenced quite a bit by people like Donald Trump as that was really bad. We're not anything like that. Well, now we have actually passed More deaths, 676,000 deaths from the current pandemic. The 1918 pandemic killed about 675,000. Now, granted, the US population was smaller back then, so proportionally, not as many people have died. We'll get to those numbers. But you should also bear in mind that these are all just sort of estimates, both for 1918 and for today. It's likely that they're being undercounted. There were poor records back in 1918, as well as a lack of understanding what was causing some of the deaths. Imagine how difficult, they're doing a terrible job of contact tracing now. Think about how they were doing in 1918. But also bear in mind that it is entirely likely that something like 20 to 25% of those dying from COVID-19 are not being counted in the US. Their deaths are being logged as something else. In the end though, the 1918 flu killed about one in every 150 Americans. More than one in 500 Americans has died of COVID-19. So a measurable percentage of the population. Nina Turner, it continues to this day. It's not getting better. We're about as bad as we've ever really been.
Yeah, and we also have to keep in mind that in 1918, the vast difference between the technology that we have and the science that we have over time, we do not have to or should not be dealing with COVID to this magnitude. We need more people. We got to tame it. That's really, let me make a long story less long. We got to tame COVID, and there will be multiple ways to do it. We'll find out new information is being processed, you know, and that's what the science is about. That is what an understanding is about. But what we do know right now is that masks help to slow down the spread. We also know that we do have the vaccine to also be able to slow down the spread. And so we need people to actually, and this is actually something, John, that people can participate in to help slow down the spread so that we can tame this thing. We got to get to herd immunity. And it's hard to get there because you got all of these conspiracy theories out there. You got people propagating stuff. They ain't got MD the first. They ain't got no MD the first. Yet they are steering people in the wrong direction. So I'm asking people, yes, doing your own research is smart. I would never tell people not to do their own research, but we do have some technological advancements at our disposal that our predecessors did not have. Do your research, talk to your medical professionals, get the vaccine, wear the mask.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, look, the monoclonal antibodies and all that, ready access to masks and gloves and all that, but the tech was not always to our benefit. I did some research, by the way. Did you know that in 1918, there wasn't a single household in the United States that got Fox News Channel? Not one. So that was a benefit that they had over us. In any event, Dr. Howard Markle, University of Michigan physician and medical historian, says, I think we are now pretty well done with historical comparisons. Well, I guess unless we reach one in 150 Americans having died. I mean, we've already passed the Civil War, let alone Vietnam. I mean, we get a Vietnam every month, basically, at this point. We are getting a 9/11 every 1.5 days again. And nobody really seems to care. So bear that in mind. You know how bad it is? I saw this headline. This is crazy. COVID deaths caused Alabama's population to shrink for the first time last year. More people died than were born thanks to the pandemic. 67,714 Alabamans died. Only 57,641 were born. And the number who died of COVID is bigger than that gap. If not for COVID, their population would not have shrunk. So that's fun. Anyway, I want to show you the updated numbers because I just sort of assumed, you know, lagged indicators and all that. By the time I came back, we'll have been freaking out for a while. So the cases will have been going down. So the deaths will start going down. Well, if you look at this chart, the cases have been sort of steady for a bit now, a few weeks. But if you look at the deaths, they're up 51% over the past 2 weeks, still nearly 2,100 deaths a day on average. And honestly, I can't even conceive how that's possible. Not just because we know so much more than we did about how it's transmitted and all that, but so many people are vaccinated. It is a monumental accomplishment that we could still transmit COVID at the rates that we are at this point, getting 2,100. You know, I remember a couple of weeks ago, cases started going up. Maybe it was a month ago. Cases started going up as I started tweeting about it. And I would get these jackasses who would tweet me about, yeah, how many deaths are there? And I would be like, well, you know, like on average about 500, which seems really bad. It's weird that that doesn't bother you. But they were like gloating that it was only 500. Well, now we're back up over 2,100. So I don't know. Are you entertained now, randos on Twitter? Have we finally reached a level that will merit a little bit of amazement? So anyway, I there's no real point here, Nina, but I'm just shocked that it could be this bad.
I'm with you. Why do we have to get deaths to get people's attention? The goal is to prevent the deaths. Duh. So that's one point. Understanding that viruses are older than human existence, they're going to mutate. And so the science is trying to keep up with the different variances that are inevitable. So that is, and so until this is something that everybody can participate in. And those people who are unwilling to get the vaccine, those people who are willing to wear a mask most of the time, you know, especially when you're in large gatherings, you're just being selfish. If you don't want to do it for you, do it for somebody else. Mm-hmm. Do it to help us tame this virus. And we got to tame it, not just in this country, but all over the world. And then my third point, John, hospitals are overwhelmed. So let me put this memo out here. Even for, let's just say you got to go in for a routine checkup or you get an emergency that has nothing to do with COVID. To the extent that the hospital system is overrun because of the pandemic, there's a domino effect that has an impact on every other thing within our medical system. And I mean everything, routine checkups, to if you have an emergency not related. So we cannot escape the responsibility that all of us hold to be able to do what we individually and collectively can do to tame the damn virus.
Yes.
It's infuriating, John. I mean, it's absolutely infuriating. I'm talking about folks who can do something. And then my last point, industrialized nations need to stop hoarding the vaccine, so that poorer nations can at least get their first shot, because that's driving me crazy too. To know that there are so many countries where people have not even gotten their first shot because of nations like ours and others who are hoarding the vaccine. Cut it out. This is a worldwide, that's why it's called a pandemic. We need worldwide action, starting at home. Don't get me wrong, charity starts at home and spread abroad. And the United States has to be a leader in that, and other industrialized nations, to make sure poor nations get the vaccine as well.
And now is a good time to push for it, because Biden's at the UN. Biden has not been supportive of the US doing what it can to actually make sure that people around the globe get vaccinated. So now would be a good time. A couple other little bits of news on the pandemic though, just so that you keep updated. White House COVID-19 response coordinator Jeff Zients announced yesterday that the Biden administration will allow fully vaccinated travelers from around the world to enter the US beginning in November. I have a follow-up question, why would they want to? I don't know, we'll see if he gets back to us, but they are allowing it. And Pfizer and BioNTech's coronavirus vaccine has been judged to be safe and effective in children aged 5 to 11 at a lower dose than adults receive, at least according to the company, as a result of a pediatric trial. So congratulations to Fox News. Your rundown is now set for the rest of the week. The fact that they've tested this and it's okay for kids, their heads are exploding, and that's all that they'll talk about, I suppose. But anyway, it is theoretically good news if you'd like your kid to not get COVID in the near future.
Just like we have other vaccines, polio, you know, let us not forget the vaccines that children must take before they can enter school. Yep. We're just at another phase of that. We got to think about this in that way. How many lives have been saved because there was a polio vaccine? Yep. And other childhood diseases, mumps, measles, rubella, all of that stuff.
Yeah, and those were not controversial. Although again, I will refer you to my research. Had there been Fox News 70 years ago, perhaps they would be. let's demonstrate that actually right now. What does it look like on a daily basis for a billionaire funded media company to have as its mission statement driving you mad? Well, it looks like this.
The point of mandatory vaccination is to identify the sincere Christians in the ranks, the free thinkers, the men with high testosterone levels, and anyone else who does not love Joe Biden, and make them leave immediately. It's a takeover of the US military. Here's how they're doing it. This show has just obtained a PowerPoint that the Army is using to justify mandatory vaccines to the troops. This is an actual slide from it on your screen. You will notice there the sympathetic portrayal of Satanism. How many children were sacrificed to Satan because of the vaccine? The slide reads, apparently sarcastically. Then the presentation proceeds to list the so-called tenets of Satanism, which are taken straight from the Temple of Satanism website. So here you have the United States Army doing PR for Satanism. The rest of the presentation is less shocking than that, but it's utterly shoddy and dishonest. For example, it falsely claims that only 3 people have died from taking the COVID vaccine. Reports collected by the Biden administration itself indicate that number is actually in the thousands.
That is not true. That is not true. Yes, some people have died who had the vaccine. The vaccine didn't kill them, but there's no need to, I would hope for our audience to provide that clarification. You know that he's blatantly lying. You know why he's lying to his audience. But that said, Nina, his claim is that the US military, which loves Satanism, is making soldiers get vaccinated to drive away Christians and men with high testosterone levels.
Just the level of this is irresponsible, what Tucker Carlson is doing. I mean, it's one thing to politicize what the Biden administration is doing, to say that you disagree with mandatory vaccinations. It's another thing to continue on this foolery path that Tucker Carlson is doing and putting lives in jeopardy. And Lord Jesus, I call on Jesus a lot, not a man calling on Satan. He bringing Satan in this. Last time I checked, at least from my beliefs, God is stronger than Satan. So Tucker needs to cut this out. He really does. And then the testosterone, now it's all about manhood now, Tucker.
I'm gonna keep it real. I don't like it when any of the idiots on the right like try to claim this thing about masculinity or being alpha or whatever. And maybe I'm lowering myself to descend this level. The messengers who do that very frequently on the right. I mean, come on. Like, seriously, nobody's looking at Tucker Carlson as like, I don't agree with him, but he is a brute man. Come on. And so here's the thing. Tucker Carlson just said, obviously free thinkers wouldn't get the vaccine. Sincere Christians wouldn't get the vaccine. Men with high testosterone wouldn't get the vaccine. People who just don't love Biden wouldn't get the vaccine. I am willing to bet every dollar I has, he's got the vaccine. So which is it, Tucker? Did you fall short and get the vaccine because you love Biden? Because you're not a sincere Christian? Because you can't think freely? Or is it your low T? What resulted in you getting the vaccine, Biden? But substantively, this is the issue. Tucker Carlson will never load into his teleprompter, you listening to this, don't get the vaccine, it will kill you. He'll never be that blatant. But if you watch his show, if it's night after night of strong men and free thinkers and Christians would never get the vaccine, he's not telling you not to get the vaccine, but he's claiming good people don't get the vaccine. And then he's also lying about it killing thousands of people. What would you take away from watching this? If this was your source of information night after night, would you want to get the vaccine, Nina?
No, I mean, because he's feeding into a certain mindset. Again, you want to talk about free thinkers. Allow people, give people the information and to think freely about whether or not they should get the vaccine, and for them to consult with medical professionals and not Tucker Carlson. I mean, it is the height of irresponsibility for him to continue to push this propaganda. And then also with all great, with scientific development, with medications, any medications, certain people bear higher risk depending on their health condition. And that is why it is important that we consult the people who are the experts and the specialists in the medical profession. I mean, aspirin, you know, just over-the-counter medications, anybody can have a reaction, but the wholesale blame all of this on the vaccine, all of the woes. I just found out what causes all the woes in the world, and it is the COVID-19 vaccine. That's caused all the woes known to humankind.
100%.
According to Tucker Carlson.
And unfortunately, there are actual woes. And so we're going to go to one. Now, we have some kids who were interviewed by the media about the loss of their father, someone who was vaccine hesitant. And in the video you're about to see, they talk about why he did not get vaccinated until it was too late.
His final words to my stepmom on a FaceTime call was that he wished that he was vaccinated.
Those were his final words?
To my stepmom, the last call that she had with him, he said that he wished that he was vaccinated.
And Katie, you said from one media source in particular, he was getting information that led him to be hesitant on vaccines. Who? I mean, who was he listening to?
He watched some Tucker Carlson videos on YouTube. And some of those videos involved some misinformation about vaccines. Mm-hmm. And I believe that that played a role.
And so look, they said, quote, he wasn't by any means far right. He was right in the middle and he consumed media from both sides. And just some of the misinformation on one of those sides made him hesitant. So he was going to wait for FDA approval. But by the time that Pfizer has been approved, it was already too late. And my producer's telling me he was only 45 years old. So it wasn't that he wasn't one of the people that thought that getting the vaccine was the mark of the beast or anything, but he was hesitant. He wasn't sure if there might be side effects. Like that is all Tucker Carlson has done all year is try to scare them into waiting, scare them into being nervous, telling them to ask questions, never asking questions himself, never saying what specific questions they should ask, but just wait. And a lot of people have died along the way. It might not have been because of Tucker Carlson with this individual man, but a lot of families have lost people because of commentary like his.
Well, you heard what his children said, and Tucker and others that are just feeding poison. You want to talk about killing people? They're feeding poison, a steady diet of poison. Again, please. Seek advice from a medical professional. And you know, if you have questions and concerns, that's fine. But go to a doctor and talk about those concerns. And don't get your medical advice from Tucker Carlson or anybody else that wants to prevent you from getting this vaccine. The COVID pandemic is real. People are dying. And guess what? We can actually do something about it now. We have the vaccine. Yeah. We can do something about that's really sad. And I feel for that man's family. I feel especially for his children and to know that their dad, the last words according to them, or at least the last phone call he had with their stepmom was, I wish I had taken the vaccine.
Yeah, he was 45.
He had a whole chunk of his life. No, 45 is the new 35. You know, I mean, 45 is very young. And he had his whole life ahead of him. And he died from something that could have been prevented. Yep. Get the vaccine.
And if you have questions, ask them. Seriously. Please. The vaccine hasn't been available for just like 2 weeks. It's been a while. There's been like 3 seasons of The Masked Singer. Since the vaccine's been released, when are you getting around to these questions that you want to ask at this point? I see people claim that all the time. That seems like you're just waiting at this point. Get on the phone, Google. Don't go on Facebook, but ask your questions.
Ask your doctor, ask a nurse. And John, a lot of the components that make up the vaccine have been around for a long time. This is not stuff that just happened yesterday. That is another misconception about this. On the one hand, we needed science to operate quickly. We needed the medical profession to act quickly to try to tame this thing. And then on the other hand, you're having people say, whoa, they did this too fast. I want folks to go and do research. Much of the components, the ingredients used in the vaccine have been around for a while. This type of research, you know, similar research has been being done for a while. So this is not just totally, absolutely brand new. Yeah, not absolutely 100%. Brand new. So please talk to a doctor, an MD doctor.
An actual MD.
Please.
Okay, we're going to take our second break. When we come back, though, the first invocation of the anti-abortion law in Texas has now gone through, and we've got some more updates about that after this. Oh, really fast. Dragonheart sent in a super chat saying, I saw a clip on Don Lemon this morning where he was showing the reaction to the seatbelt mandate. You could have interchanged all the responses with masks and vaccines. Yeah, we talked about that early on when the anti-mask stuff started. But yeah, they freaked out about the seatbelt mandate. I remember back when I used to ride motorcycles, like there were a lot of people on motorcycles that fought hard against any sort of helmet laws and things like that. Like this is maybe the most consequential outgrowth of that thing that some Americans have, this weird idea of what freedom is.
Yeah.
But it's not new.
And the difference between the individual wearing the seatbelt or wearing the helmet is by not getting the vaccine, not wearing the mask, you know, most of the time you're putting other people at risk. This is not just about you as an individual, it's about the whole. But you're right. People did resist. I'm glad they brought that up. Vehemently resisted the seatbelt.
Yeah. Okay. So with that, we are running low on time. We're going to jump into our last big story of this first hour. Two people who oppose the new anti-abortion law in Texas are suing a doctor, Dr. Alan Braid, in order to test the legality of the law. So this is using the law. So bear that in mind, but by people who are doing it so that it can start to work its way through the court system and potentially be either knocked down or put on hold at one of the intermediary steps before eventually, inevitably, the massively conservative Supreme Court upholds the whole thing. But that's just my prediction. We'll see as we get there. But anyway, a San Antonio doctor who said that he performed an abortion in defiance of a new Texas law has been sued by two people. Former attorneys in Arkansas and Illinois filed lawsuits against Dr. Alan Braid, who in a weekend Washington Post opinion column became the first Texas abortion provider to publicly reveal that he had violated the law, which began at the beginning of this month. In the op-ed, he said, on the morning of September 6th, I provided an abortion to a woman who, though still in her first trimester, was beyond the state's new limit. I acted because I had a duty of care to this patient, as I do for all patients, and because she has a fundamental right to receive this care. I believe abortion is an essential part of healthcare. I spent the past 50 years treating and helping patients. I can't just sit back and watch us return to 1972. And you know, Nina, I'd been wondering when we would start to see doctors or clinics being clear about this. And it actually took quite a while. It took weeks for, you know, I understand, look, being sued and potentially suffering those consequences is very intimidating. But I am glad that there are doctors that are taking a stand and saying, we're not gonna, you know, take back rights that these women have had their entire lives effectively.
Yeah, and I certainly applaud this doctor and all other doctors in Texas who will follow his lead. The duty of care, _, bold, is vitally important. And I'm glad the doctor laid that out that way. And then also to go backwards in time, I mean, there are women who actually died before abortions were legal. Abortions are part of reproductive health care. And that's what we need to understand and start to see that as a nation, that it is part of a holistic reproductive health care for women. And I've had women, you know, tell stories, especially when I was in the legislature, of, you know, coat hangers, you know, the backyard abortions, because one way or the other, folks are going to get it. Roe v. Wade, law of the land, Texas is upending that. Safe, legal, and rare. You know, and they want to go backwards in time. And it's very clear that this doctor understood not just his duty of care, but as the doctor laid out, he doesn't want to see a time where we were pre-Roe v. Wade.
Yeah, and these two lawyers from two different states, although they say that they're in supportive of reproductive rights, are doing, I guess, what has to happen, which is suing this doctor that they technically agree with, because under the law, the restriction can only be enforced through private lawsuits. The first is Oscar Stille said he is not opposed to abortion, but sued to force a court review of the law. Felipe Gomez of Chicago asked a court in San Antonio in his lawsuit to declare the new law unconstitutional. In his view, the law is a form of government overreach. He said his lawsuit is a way to hold the Republicans who run Texas accountable. The weird thing though is, and I am not a lawyer, and I guess it's baked into this bounty system. How could either of them be said to have any standing whatsoever? They literally do not even live in the state. They don't know either the woman who had the abortion, the doctor who performed it. They have no vested interest in literally any of this. And that is why, that's another reason why the Supreme Court obviously should have put it on hold. They've created an enforcement mechanism where literally only people who have no interest beyond being a reproductive rights Karen effectively have no standing in any of the court cases that they're going to be launching. But the Republicans did that because they believed it would allow the Supreme Court to give them time, saying it's novel or whatever. And that is unfortunately the way that it's going. And so we have to go through these ridiculous machinations like these two lawyers doing this. And you know, I know that we're getting into the area, I guess, of speculation, Nina, but the idea is that another court might knock this down. What do you think about those odds based on what you've been seeing?
Yeah, I mean, that is a possibility. And I hope that that does happen. The Supreme Court certainly, you know, abdicating its responsibility here. And we got to stop tech. There will be a lot of copycats, if you will, all across this country because of Texas. And they are definitely turning back the hands of time on women's reproductive health care, which is a multifaceted realm within medicine. Abortion access is only one portion of that reproductive health care. But I am hoping that we're gonna hold out hope on this one, and hoping that the legal system will provide some redress. And the Congress needs to get ready to act as well, because we know once the Supreme Court acts or does not act, you know, the Congress has some power there, and we got to make sure that we utilize it to not turn back the hands of time for women.
Yeah. Yeah, the Democrats in theory could do something, assuming that both the filibuster and the parliamentarian are asleep at the same time, then maybe something can be done. In any event, fast updates from the areas around Texas. In Oklahoma City, Trust Women, which provides abortions and other forms of reproductive care, saw 80 abortion patients the week of the 6th of September, about double what it would normally see. Close to 2/3 of those patients were from Texas. Another clinic in Kansas saw 70 abortion patients that same week, with half coming from Texas. And so the Oklahoma City clinic is booked solid through the end of September. The volume of patient calls has increased tenfold. Patients are calling from Houston and Dallas. And so you're seeing what you would expect. Women wanting to exercise their reproductive rights are having to travel, potentially driving, potentially flying outside of the state they live in to be able to exercise those rights once again. And so again, it can still in theory happen, assuming you have the resources, you can take the time off, you can afford to pay for the travel. And so as we've always said, these sorts of laws do not stop all abortions, they stop some abortions. If you don't have the means, if you don't have the influence, then it might actually stop you.
That's it, John. I'm glad you brought that up, because the barriers are important. The barriers to reproductive health, the barriers to abortion, the burden is borne primarily by poor women, once again, which is the reality, quite frankly, for all elements of most elements of healthcare, but especially something like this.
Yeah, 100%. And by the way, I would refer everyone watching this to the interview that I did about a week ago with Ellie Mistile, where we talked about some of the other court cases. We have an update on one of those that we discussed in that interview. The Supreme Court has scheduled arguments for the highly anticipated Mississippi abortion case that's going to be December 1st. The court will be considering the legality of Mississippi's ban on most abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. And this is the sort of court case before the Supreme Court that, in theory, if the Supreme Court decided, no, we're just done with Roe v. Wade, it's gone, this is the sort of case where in theory that could actually be applied, more so than on the challenges that'll come from the Texas bill, even if that effectively eliminates Roe v. Wade for most women. Sure. So we'll be updating you on that as well. Now, thank you to everyone on our linear platforms who are watching. We are unfortunately running out of time in our first hour, but if you're watching on Twitch or if you're watching on YouTube, we still have another half hour coming for you. We're going to be talking about an anti-masker claiming that she is effectively Rosa Parks by using blackface. So that'll be fun. We'll see you after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.